Watchmen Talk, your number one source for all things relating to HBO's hit series Watchmen. I am, as always, Carolyn, joined by my co-hosts Tony and Vanessa and the lovely Wendy. Everybody's lovely, though, because this whole episode was about love. It was an episode that dealt with the power of it, the circular nature of it, how two individuals can connect through it. And my first thought leaving this episode, and I wonder how many of my co-hosts would agree with me, was I honestly think Dr. Manhattan finally found like his one true love OTP. Like he had Laurie, and that was a thing, and we could talk about that. And he had Jenny or Janie, and that was a thing. But him and Angela just clicked together. She, you know, what do we think of that, guys?
I think he was always plagued by the idea that he knew how everything was going to end. And I think that's, what happened with Lori, and that's what happened with Janie. And they eliminated that problem with Angela, and that kind of finally allowed
Well,
him to be himself.
sort of.
Not entirely.
Because he still knew what was up with Angela. I mean, like he still knew that it ended in tragedy, but she challenges him in a way that Lori and the other people don't. You know, she's a wholly connected person and she knows exactly who she is, and she doesn't see him as like an omnipotent god figure. And she has a real, you know, world canon reason for that, which is why I really truly like ship. I don't know what the ship name would be. Vanessa, you're in charge of the ship names. What's the ship name?
I honestly, I didn't even really think about it. I was thinking about like,
Angela.
yeah, you could do that, or you could like combine their hero names, like Dr. Knight or something like that, or
Oh, yes.
something silly like that. I don't know. I haven't really thought. My brain's been like scrambled over the last couple of days because of the crisis. So I'm sorry, guys, if I'm a little distracted.
That's something we're also going to talk about at the end of the episode. You guys know Watchmen is not going to be in Crisis on Infinite Earths, but I still want to talk, speculate, what would it look like if it was? Okay, so that's my final carrot for you guys to get through the whole episode because all three of my co-hosts are watching Crisis on Infinite Worlds
Well,
first.
I'm not there yet. I have it planned to watch, and I'm seeing the tweets, and I'm like, I don't know, y'all. I don't know, but I'll watch it eventually.
I've read a few articles already talking about it. I think it's fundamentally a different way of doing television.
Well, so is Watchmen to an extent. I
No,
mean,
that's what
like
I'm
the
saying. No, that's what I'm saying is I think between the two, Watchmen is so much more planned and plotted and purposeful, and there's only 9 episodes instead of what, 24. So it does have that advantage.
Yeah, but even then, like it, I don't know. It's like caviar, honestly. Like this episode was.
It was so good. Can I tell you how sweet it is that you have this kind of, omnipotent being that could do or be anything, and when he finally has all his responsibilities stripped away from him, the thing he wants to be is a dad.
Yes. Oh my goodness.
Also, I've been going on and on and on about the Christmas present, and I think that's
Yeah.
the point. The point is not what's in the Christmas present. It's that he didn't know for like the first time in a long time what was in the Christmas present.
Yeah, I think they made a
Wendy,
point of that.
you just literally picked it up. That's kind of crazy.
I still want to know, though.
You know what it's probably? A clock.
Yeah,
Oh,
it's probably a
a watch, most likely.
clock.
Yeah, pocket watch.
Pocket watch. It's a clock. I mean, we can. It's a mini. They're gonna open it. It's gonna be a clock with an egg on it because that stupid egg symbolism is back. And I'm just like, okay. So, where do we want to start with this? Do we want to break it? Actually, no. You know what? Before we break it down, because we don't. You know, because I missed doing this last. What did we all think of the episode? Let's go around and just give our general impressions, and then we can close it out with like what we want to happen in the finale. So, what did we think of the second to last episode of Watchmen?
Penultimate. Thank you,
Penultimate. I was.
Lemmy. Yeah.
Yes. Thank you. Thank you. Because I thought about that word and I was like, no, I don't know if I want to go there. But then you helped me out. So thank you.
I mean, I really loved the episode. I thought it was really like an homage to obviously like the original way they told his origin story. I enjoy, I really enjoyed like their interactions the most part. Like she really just did not, she wasn't like dazzled by him at any point. Like there were some fun points where there, she was just like curious and like amused by him, but like there was never a point where she was just like oohing and aahing over him. And I thought that was like a, felt like a real way like to tell their kind of love story. I thought that was interesting. I don't know. I really liked the episode and I love, I just love seeing, finally we got to see his face and just like, it was like honestly like comedy at the end. I don't know. I just kind of, well, like just like throughout the whole bit when he woke up or whatever, but I just thought it was fun. I thought it was an interesting way to tell their story.
But the adorable thing was is to see them as a couple with all their quirks, knowing each other's quirks, and here's this person who's so powerful they could like change all of reality, and she won't take his crap, which I was like, I was so glad. I was so worried it really was going to be that soppy puppy dog love. And I'm like, it was just like, this is a normal adult relationship. And it was really cool.
And he was serving, like, he was trying to serve game, and she was just, she had none of it. You know, I talk a lot about how, you know, I've never been on the recipient end of game, but I know what it looks like. And he was trying to be smooth, and she was just like, you're a dude who's painted blue. And the juxtaposition of the overweight gentleman in the background who looks so smooth, and then you compare it to this debonair stranger walking in. Also, I love that they let the actor Yaha, am I saying his name right? Who is playing Cal play Manhattan. I like that, because like they could have brought back Billy Crudup, they could have done anything like that, but no, they kept the continuity, and I like that a lot.
That's who he was now. I mean, he had been Cal for so, he still remembered all of Cal's memories. It wasn't like he skipped from one point to the other, right? So it's like,
yeah, but
now
like,
this is who he was.
I think what Carolyn means is like how, like in the past before he was ever, I mean, he'd still experience life.
Yeah,
like how,
yeah, yeah. They never let him. Yeah,
given how he experiences stuff, but. At that point, he had not yet become Cal.
Yeah, it was almost like he hadn't yet become himself or fully matured, right? He was still more, they kept it more like ethereal, right?
Yeah.
Because you didn't see his face, so he was like, now he was this omnipotent being who slowly becomes more and more human the deeper he gets into the relationship.
Yeah, basically, like, it was kind of, I mean, I think, like, realistically, it was just that they didn't have to hire another actor or CGI a different face.
Oh, come on. Let's read into it.
Yeah. It does work, like, in the meaningful way as well.
My favorite part was when he kept saying, like, you know, oh, you know, the moment is in the future. But when that moment came, it was like he was experiencing it for the first time, even though he had remembered it earlier, but it was just kind of like the moment happened and he would have the reaction, and it was so awkward to do the acting because he had this reaction like it was the first time he'd seen it, but you know he hadn't. He knew about it before. So I thought that was great, and maybe I understand Dr. Manhattan's way of seeing a lot more now because of that, because of the idea that it's not just that he perceives time happening all at once. It actually is happening all at once for him.
Yeah. No, and it's, in knowing the decisions, you know what was really cool was how much he wanted to respect Angela, because he was sitting there and, like, he knew what he wanted to say, but he kept telling her, like, you know, it's your idea, and then I won't tell you that. Oh, my God, you know, okay, because there's that one part later when he's like, then it won't be your idea anymore. Do you think that was an allusion to what happened later in the episode?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh my God. Oh my God.
You mean like at the end?
Yeah, where they got the reveal that essentially Angela time looped all
except
of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think he also wanted her honest opinion, and he didn't want to tell her. He really wanted some of the choices to be her choices and not based on his knowledge of the future.
Yeah, I guess, I mean, in a way, it's hard to say, like, choice and not choice if he knows it's going to happen. Like, he knows he doesn't tell her So is he choosing to let her have the choice or make the decisions, or is it just...
He already knows what she's going to choose, the right thing, so he's just going to let her choose it.
But he can't. But he, I mean, he's not going to not let her do it because his... I don't know, it's like just his way of being. I mean, okay, because basically it's not like... Like I say, the comparison we could use is Dream Girl. And we're going to use her because I love her. But
because we need more Legion references. We need at least two every episode now.
But it's not like Dream Girl where they see the future and then they like, when it comes to Dreamy, you can change like what happens. It doesn't have to happen exactly like that, that kind of thing. But the way he sees things, it's just what happens, not...
Yeah, originally you could never change anything that Dream Girl said. You just maybe didn't know everything about it. I think that's what we're going to see a little bit of here, is that, you know, you've been, some of the future's been revealed to you, but maybe not all of it. But we'll see.
Yeah, I guess I see what you mean. Like, maybe it is more similar than I'm giving credit. But I don't know. I guess it's like, it feels less like, like, I guess that's part of, I mean, I like the episode, but part of why I came away with from it feeling kind of eh was, I don't know, like, it felt like she should have known that they were going to be doomed because he said it, and that's how it works.
So, but he's right, yeah, yes, but, you know.
It's human nature, though. It's
you always have to, yeah.
Like, even when we're being told this is what's going to happen, there's always going to be that people don't like things to be thought of as predetermined. Like, we don't have a choice. So of course that down the line, she's probably like, I'm going to change this. This isn't going to happen. I can make it work. Like, she doesn't, humans don't think like he does, or they can't see time the way he can. So I can fully understand and believe that, like, she would think that she could alter the outcome in any way, shape or form. And at the end of the day, when he says it'll end in tragedy, we don't really know exactly what
the nature of it.
Yeah, like, tragedy could be a lot of things. But
there's
yeah.
a lot of people who are online and they're saying, you know, like, and I saw this in a professional review, a couple of professional reviews. They're like, "Oh, Cal's dead," and I'm going, "No, he said teleported and then dead
and then destroyed." Yeah,
yeah,
because they have to transfer his power. They have to, like, because he even explained in the episode. That if he broke him down into his organic essence or some weird thing,
put in the food or something.
Yeah, like, you can just consume it. If you consume it, then someone could be imbued with his powers. Like, that would be, I'm assuming, the way that they would, I'm assuming that's the way they're going to do that, is that they're going to, like, consume him, like the body of Christ. There were so many allusions to him being God in this episode. So, like, obviously, well, not even God, not even allusions, just flat out saying it, but, like, it would make sense that, like, they would do that, like a Last Supper type of thing, or with them consuming his body or something gross like that.
The philosophical, like, religious stuff in this was just, oh God, Vanessa, I can't wait to hear your thoughts on my
head. All right, should we go back to chronological, or should we, because we can keep reading.
Well, I mean, is it, was it even chronological?
I mean, it wasn't really chronological at all. It would make it would make sense for this one to not be chronological.
Okay, so if that's, you know what though, and that's our hook for this, ladies and gentlemen. This is the non-chronological discussion where we're just going to freeform everything that we wanted to talk about. So if that's the case, then I legit want to talk about how, and I was thinking about this personally, about personal life. I want to talk about how this episode let Angela be soft and vulnerable.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to talk about, like, why I was thinking about this personally, but it was really nice to see her be, like, you know, soft and like, the proposal scene, and it was cute, and it was fluffy, and the way that they used the ring. Okay, so, because in the episode, people will remember that, you know, Manhattan had a thing put in his head that Veidt designed, and it was going to, like, you know, kind of keep him from knowing who he was, which is pretty ingenious. And it's kind of like, okay, why did you not do that? But I get kind of why they had to go around that. But the fact that, like, you know, it was a proposal sort of thing, and he got down on one knee, and he was giggling, and she was laughing. I was just like, I really, truly ship this. I ship this hard. And she got to be vulnerable with him. And I was like, that is, you know, very rarely in life do you encounter people who truly support you being weak. and needing them and being soft. And Manhattan did that for her, and that was great.
But he didn't have to. I mean, he's there to support her in whatever she wants to do, and she is very strong. I didn't feel she was ever weak. She might have been soft, but that's a different thing, right? It's not soft to love someone. I mean, it's not weak to love someone. And I think she was always like, I mean, just the bravery involved in deciding to embrace someone when you know there's a ticking clock. Even if you don't fully believe it, is that, I mean, that takes incredible strength. And I think, you know, yes, you saw her, you know, smiling and happy, and I think you've seen that in the show a little bit, but I think that was the beauty of it, is that he didn't want a weak woman. You know, he didn't want, it is kind of a contrast to dating a 16-year-old. Oh, okay. but I mean, this is, I think he learned some stuff about life and he decided that he wanted someone, you know, who was more, you know, of a mature
literally
woman.
Like double her age. Like, I think I said, like, 32, 33.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Literally. She's like 43 now and it was 10 years ago. Yeah. Yeah, double. And probably older than when he was left Janie. I think he left Janie in her 30s.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I think she made that comment about how she was obviously chasing jailbait or whatever, and he actually said that she was visibly getting older every day, and which I always found was interesting, because Regina King is, I think, she's like 53, I want to say. So I want to say, like, yeah, he's, you know, obviously he spent like a good chunk of his time, you know, being,
she's 48 years old.
She's 48. Okay.
Yeah. 48
years. And
she's playing 43 on the show, but yeah.
Playing 43 on the show. Okay. So I combined an age I did not know. Anyway, but yeah, so I thought that was interesting and shows, like, even though he is like this omnipotent perhaps type of person, that he is growing, showing some maturity in his taste, I guess, in women, which is people, because
there was a reviewer, and I will find her review, Joel Monique, who wrote it for the AV Club. I will find a review because I read it and it brought up something very interesting that I want to poll my co-hosts about, which was technically Manhattan and Laurie's relationship was kind of profoundly uncomfortable. Would you like to see some sort of resolution between those two, or like, how would you like that to end or play out?
I think we're getting it.
Yeah, we're going to get that.
We're
kind
of destined to get it.
Yeah,
I want Laurie to react to him having been Cal and all that, just from like, I mean, that's a dumb, like, kind of like fan picky kind of wish fulfillment kind of thing. But I mean, I know what I want it, you know, like, why go through all this? So I have them both about to be in the same place and have them not.
Is HBO going to do what Disney dared not do and give us an OT3 and have two women and a man in a relationship? It could be possible.
No, I think this is about Laurie realizing that she's over him. I mean, I think being there, maybe she obsessed about him a bit. And I think at the end of the original Watchmen, I'm not saying that this was going to happen, because it's totally possible that Dr. Manhattan is done. And he's totally right about it. But at the end, if you remember the end of Watchmen, you know, Dr. Manhattan, you know, comes across Silk Spectre and Night Owl sleeping together. And he's like, hey, all right, that's nice. And he walks away because he's kind of like, yeah, that's nice. So I wonder if she's going to be like, you know, if he goes back to being Cal or whatever, whatever happens, I don't know. And like, oh, okay. You know?
I would like that ending for her, because she's spent so much of her life not having, I mean, she's had agency, but has she really had agency? Because she's made decisions, you know, her mom's made decisions for her, and then according to PDPD, I mean, even she and Dan kind of butted heads a lot, and it would be nice to just have her, like, be herself and maybe just not even need anybody and, like, you know, kind of go off. And so I agree with that.
Well, I think that's what she's trying to do. I mean, Dan's been in prison since the mid-90s, right?
That's true.
Yeah, but even her job is, like, wasn't it bargained?
I feel like she was compelled to do her job, so she's not doing what she wants to either.
Yeah. So, I mean, we'll see, I guess.
But I am still thinking about that rock. You know, what is the brick that she threw in the air?
You mean metaphorically?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like that can't be a throwaway. It can't be a throwaway. There has to be some, like, the kicker at the end has to be.
No, maybe it's sad, but maybe she set something up for John to, like, maybe not destroy him, but, like, in the state he's about to be in, maybe it would destroy him.
Well, I don't think that she, I mean, I don't think that she'd want to punish him per se.
Yeah.
But, like, perhaps something along the lines of, you know, oh, gosh. Not punishment. Maybe she set him up to, like, call him back to Earth initially. You know, maybe because she's older technically than Angela. Maybe she was like, hey, here's this or something like that. But that's a very good question. I don't know what that would be.
Yeah, but you have no idea. That's why I'm hoping to be incredibly surprised by some kind of kicker. Yeah.
Vanessa is the Damon expert. Would he do something like that?
So, listen, Damon is really big into religious themes and themes of the afterlife and purgatory and limbo. This is a prevalent in Lost. It was prevalent in The Leftovers. And I cannot help but notice some of the same themes that are going on in Watchmen. There is an apocalypse or Armageddon coming. There is something happening where a lot of people are going to die, maybe as a precursor to a larger event, or maybe it's just something so small scale that affects a lot of people. I don't know, but I have a feeling that something dimensional is going to happen. Like, we keep talking about these interdimensional excursions and stuff. What if they do at the end of this episode, I can see him doing something wild where at the end of the finale, where we get in a glimpse into another reality, another dimension, and they look at it and it's ours. It's a very Damon thing I can see doing. And it's because I'm so obsessed with his work that I can see him doing something like that.
Listen, Vanessa, from your mouth to God's ears, please, because that is my jam. That is the whole reason why I've been, if you follow me on Twitter, please don't follow me on Twitter, because I've been live tweeting his Dark Materials, and that's our world and this world, and it's like multiple realities. Yeah. Yes.
I'm biased as hell because I'm all about multiversal nonsense. Like, yeah. I love dimensions and parallel universes, but the evidence backs me up. This is his MO. Like, it would not surprise me if, because these dimensions and all this stuff we've been talking about, it's been like sprinkled throughout the seasons. Like, I wouldn't be surprised, or sprinkled throughout the episodes. I wouldn't be surprised if they reveal that the dimension that we thought didn't exist because Adrian just made it up actually was there was a different dimension, or there are dimensions.
And he goes, see that bearded man in England? That's Alan Moore. He made us. And see the bald man in Los Angeles?
I don't know if we'll get that in one hour.
Grant Morrison, yeah. Grant Morrison with it, yeah. The multiverse.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead. I feel like it'll get weirder, more, like, it can be conventional. There's no way it's going to conventionally end where, you know, he dies or she saves him or, you know, someone dies. I don't know if you guys read PDPedia, but there seems to be some destruction going on.
Not get to PDPedia today.
I the second thing was very weird and I barely skimmed it.
The fog dancing. I didn't read the other part.
It was weird. PD's weird. And then, but the memo, it's mostly just nonsense about him talking about himself, but, like, there's a first paragraph where it says, it's the aftermath. He's talking about the aftermath, September 26, 2019, the aftermath of what happened basically in the season finale. He said there's bodies in the ruins. He said one of them may or may not be Agent Blake. So, yeah, there's potential that she's dead.
I don't like these spoilers.
Wikipedia! But also, we don't know. This is literally him typing up a memo, and then he dovetails into his own memories of writing some random shit, and then the fog dancing thing, and then the second thing was his fog dancing submission. So it really was just kind of a useless PDPD this week, I'm not gonna lie. Besides that one paragraph where it was, he was basically, they were like trying to figure out what was going, what happened in Tulsa, or what happened in Greenwood, I think they said. Yeah.
Isn't it kind of crazy that he is that Veidt has a copy of Fog Dancing, since he had no time to bring anything with him? It was just kind of in the castle.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We should talk about the castle. And...
Wait, whoa.
Okay, okay.
I do want to say about the Fog Dancing that, I mean, Veidt's like a genius. So maybe he just remembered it, and then over the past few years, he wrote it down. Like
it had the same cover as the people on the farm.
I don't know. He's a little weirdo.
He did murder the author, too, so there's that.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm a little lost. What is Fog Dancing? Can we...
Fog Dancing was the book... So the guy who wrote the Black Freighter comic series, and who was one of the authors for Veidt's scenario with the squid, had written Fog Dancing before he started writing comics, I think years earlier. And of course he was blown up on the ship with all of the artists that worked on the project, quote unquote.
And now, okay. We're trying to, I'm playing the ignorant one. I totally knew. Totally knew what that was.
It was also the book that, Ma Clark was reading while she was waiting for people to come buy eggs on the Clark farm.
Oh, there was an egg this episode.
Yeah. Yes,
the egg theme is back. Which came first? They both were simultaneous.
And Cal was using... What is the significance? Okay, so Cal's in here and he's making waffles. What is the significance, if anything, do you guys think of him turning... It, okay, because you know you could go through anything and you could assign meaning to anything in this. Is the whole point of being God making a waffle? I mean, is that like the whole...
No, I think he wanted a waffle. I think the inappropriateness doesn't make sense. Yeah, he'd been making waffles.
Breakfast, right? Yeah.
Okay. It reminds me of like all those, like those, a lot of those iterations like of God, you know, like Morgan Freeman or whoever. It's like always this like kind of like chill or like bum kind of dude. He's like, whatever, you know, they're like whatevs. I feel like that's kind of like the portrayal of like, I don't know, I just want to make some waffles, I don't care, like this is whatever. But I feel like that's the kind of like this thing that,
and it was so inappropriate. Like there was a point at which he said she needed to see him on the water, and then that moment was over, and he's just didn't make waffles because it's like, yeah, you're about to die, and we zapped the kids away, and she doesn't know where they are, but let's make some waffles. Because, you know, I'm hungry.
Speaking of zapping people away, okay, remember how I was like, 2000, what a space odyssey, and we were like, no, it's the moon, and then I was like, no, it's Europa. And I know that there's a lot of other significance to Europa, but I just want to say I called it because Europa is the same moon from the 2001 and David
yes,
Bowman.
No, I conceded that back in the same episode. but wait, let's stop, because Europa, well, maybe, you know, not Europa specifically, but Europa, of course, was when did Zeus become a cow, or did he turn a woman into a cow, and then you know, they, in order to have a romance? But it was similar to what she was talking about when she said, oh, so is it like this, like gods becoming swans in order to be with humans, kind of thing?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know what Zeus is, the swan, and I remember the rain. Like the golden shower, sorry. he turned into a couple of things, I believe.
But the cow was one of them. I can't remember whether he turned the beautiful woman into a cow after he, you know, was with her, or if he became, but whatever. It is all, I think all of the moons of Jupiter, most of them are named after Zeus's escapades.
You mean his sexcapades? Oh.
That's my subtlety.
I'm here for the subtlety, friends. You know, these guys, my other three lovely co-hosts are the mature ones. I'm the one here making the sex jokes. But but Europa, and that was, I didn't see a lot of people calling out the 2001 analogy, which makes sense. it's worth noting that 2001 is the same sort of thing about a guy, a human being who gains godlike powers and ends up creating life on Europa. But let's talk about that life that Dr. Manhattan made, that he did say he was going to go create.
So the inspiration, I think, is important, and I think I need to bring up some stuff that I don't think was properly addressed. And I know to him, these are the first two people he saw having sex to, so it's a good model for Adam and Eve. They also rescued him. But let's talk about different kinds of genocide. Because the motivation, it seemed to me, behind taking in all of these Jewish families who were running away from the Nazis in Europe was to convert their children to Christianity. Because here they took the children away and they gave them a Christian Bible inside of a chapel. And they're looking at, oh, here are these people who saved us. You know, they must be onto something, you know. And of course, they're coming from someplace where they're being persecuted for who they were. And then you have the fact that none of us really knew that John Osterman was Jewish, and it sounded like from the way that he talked about his father here that his father was not a very religious person, because you know he would have known the story of Adam and Eve. I mean, that's from the Old Testament.
Yeah, that's in the Torah as well, right?
Yeah, so and, that's the original Bible. And yeah,
Judaism is matrilineal, so his father being of Jewish descent is similar to my husband being of Jewish descent through his father. So
yeah, and my father as well. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not surprised it's not a huge connection. It reminds me similarly of like, yeah, the same thing with my husband. It's just kind of like a meh kind of thing.
Yeah, but I think there is something, like, as wonderful as these people were, I'm sure, there is something still about cultural erasure, about taking in people to convert their children, which I think it's not heavily addressed in the episode, but it did make me incredibly uncomfortable.
I wonder if it was just overlooked because you don't really see any kind of criticism of them.
No, this is his memories, right? It's his memories of being saved. But it is kind of there in the background. And again, they are bringing in this Bible with Adam and Eve and the angels. And we can talk about that more as we get into it. But there's definitely a lot of those themes he used when creating his life.
The Bible was just a weird thing to me. Like, I don't know if it's just because, you know, I was sort of raised. I mean, like, I was baptized Lutheran, but then I was brought up Episcopalian. So my attitude towards religion is that it exists and I believe, but it would just seem so bizarre for them to give. So I have to agree with Wendy because it seems so bizarre for them to just like, oh, what are you going to give him? I thought they were going to give him like a toy or something. And I'm going, okay. You know?
They had a lot of them. They were giving them to all the kids. That was definitely implied. They were giving them to all the kids. They had stacks. This was the chapel in their place and they had stacks of nicely wrapped, present wrapped. I mean, they didn't have the same kind of wrapping paper back then, but those were present wrapped Bibles to give as presents.
Yeah, because, you know, traditionally, when I got my first Bible, I remember it being an occasion of like, you know, you're raised in this and then you get it. So yeah, that definitely does not. And you put that, and then it kind of peels over into how Manhattan kind of made life, huh? Because he sort of went in with that same attitude that, like, the Christian Bible, right or wrong, does present, that this is, you know, the way that it happened, and this is the only way, and the only way it is for, you know, absolute total worship. And
but it's weird, right? So let's talk about it. It is definitely, they're definitely Adam and Eve, innocent. You know, and you know they don't have self interest really. They have no sense of self. And then there is the game warden, and I'm going to throw out there that the game warden is the Archangel Michael, and that Veidt is literally the devil. And I think Manhattan, Manhattan needed the devil to come in there, and in order for them to become self-aware or whatever, that they just weren't, they didn't have it. And maybe this is what he's been, and you had that feeling from the beginning that what he's been trying to do is to get them to be more human, right? He wants the messiness. And now it's all revealed that the whole point of this was Dr. Manhattan's like, look, do you want to go to a place where you get your perfect utopia? You know, since you don't want to, you know, you're not giving people their free will. You're deciding things for them. You want to go to a place where, you know, everything is, you know, perfect and there's no more conflict and they don't fight. You know, I'll send you to that place. And then, you know, of course, his growth over the period is to realize that you want messy. Because if everything is perfect all the time, it's incredibly dull. but I think there's more to it than that. So he's been trying all this time to you know, get them to do something different. And I think the Game Warden is definitely not the same as the Adam and Eve characters. He's something different.
Right?
Yeah, because any experience too, like, I mean, I guess we're just skipping to the end now.
that's his thing. That was his Dr. Manhattan episode. Is that he's like, I was there with the beginning when he made this and this and this. And isn't that, you know, kind of Michael's role in the Divine Comedy?
Yeah. I mean, like, Michael and the other archangels tended to, you know, they were with God at the beginning and they delivered his messages. So it makes sense that Michael, being in charge, at least in my limited religious experience, even if I have. But yeah, no, that would make sense. It's interesting. I didn't think of it in terms of angels, but when you said that, it also puts the horseshoe in a different context.
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say he gets the horseshoe, but like, you know, cloven hooves and stuff. That's kind of Satan's thing.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if it's. I think there's more to that, but.
Yeah, like I would say the horseshoe specifically is like kind of happenstance, because remember they were just putting like knives and stuff in there. And the cakes. So.
No, that was always, it was a horseshoe, the first one. It was always a horseshoe.
And he told them it's not time yet. But I don't know what that, that was about. But also, isn't Archangel Michael the patron saint of cops, bringing it all back together?
Yes.
And he does wear a mask.
Oh.
This is getting deep.
So much to him.
Gotta go crack open my old.
Like, I am not the expert on this.
Right, we're getting real.
Dang, I should have watched Supernatural.
Yeah, we all just watched Good Omens, and we read. Oh gosh, what is the other Neil Gaiman graphic novel? Is it Love Letters?
Well, Neil Gaiman likes to write. And also, Neil Gaiman likes to put Lucifer in a sympathetic light. And Bite was also, I mean, he's not sympathetic, but you definitely, I'm sorry, I'm still stuck on the horseshoe being connected to Satan. So it's like, okay, is he going to sit and he's going to overthrow paradise? Is that what's happening here? Because it's pretty clear that Manhattan pulled a god and was like, okay, well, you know, you guys seem pretty cool with everything. I got my angels in charge and I'm going to bounce, which is a lot like what happened with Good Omens.
Oh, Murder Mysteries. Sorry, before I try to interrupt. Murder Mysteries, not Love Letters. Murder Mysteries was the name of it. Have you guys ever read that? I highly recommend. It's, you know, if you don't like religious riffs on religious stories, if that makes you uncomfortable, maybe don't. But if you're okay with that, it's a very interesting look at the angels' perspectives.
You know, for totally weirdly unrelated reasons, I'm actually looking at a Bible verse website right now, and it, okay. Totally unrelated reasons, and you just reminded that there's a verse that I just came upon that reminded me of it, which is Samuel 15:23. For rebellion is like the sin of divination, and arrogance is like the evil of idolatry. Because you've rejected the word of the Lord, he has rejected you as king. And that's kind of, you know, Bite divine things, and he was arrogant, and he set himself up as a false god, while the real god kind of bounced. But the people sort of rejected that and ended up embracing him, and then, you know, will Manhattan come back? Probably not.
I could see him going back. But, I mean, depending on the state he's in after
or
being dissolved or whatever, but...
His essence, well, like, if we're going to follow the Bible thread through and through, like, when the people killed Jesus, put him up on a stake, what had happened, his resurrection, there's a whole lot of there's a whole lot they can pull from here. We have a lot, and it doesn't have to be him that resurrects, like, either. It could be someone consumes his essence, and I have a feeling, I'm putting money on it being someone like Angela or the kid, one of the kids, or something, because I just have a feeling that we're going to get a next generation Manhattan that isn't, you know what I mean? Like, I just feel like they're going to
totally keep... Topher if it's going to be a kid.
Yeah. Like, I just feel like there's going to be like, there's good, I feel like, and he's already got the Jesus hair. I mean, like, we're halfway there. We're living on a prayer, y'all.
I hope it's not one for one, though. It's, if it's like exactly one for one, it's gonna be like,
no, oh, it won't be. It won't be. I'm just saying. I just feel like we're gonna get some weird funhouse mirror version of. So if we're going biblical allegory, who's looking glass in all of this?
Oh,
is he Judas because he turned her in?
Yeah, that's a good point.
And he was sorry about it.
Yeah, and then he killed those guys. We haven't seen him again. What do you want to bet that, you know, he with the knowledge that he had and with that he took his own life? Just putting it out there, which definitely would be the same end.
I think he's infiltrated the Seven Kings. Yeah. He might sacrifice himself nobly later, but I do think that he's infiltrated to figure out what's going on.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, okay.
He took the mask.
No, you're right. But that would still, if he sacrifices himself, which I feel like is very likely, that would still put him in that role, and definitely he'd follow mm-hmm. that. Who is Keen? Like, who would Keen be? Because Keen is
false prophet.
So like maybe like an antichrist type figure, like. What if, you know?
Oh yeah, that would make sense. He's the son of a son. He's the second coming of it. The Antichrist was literally supposed to be the answer to Jesus, right? Like, he's supposed to be the,
yeah.
So he is a junior, so I could see him being the Antichrist trying to take the essence of God or Jesus or whatever. Interesting. This is getting very theological.
Yeah, you should have some Bible study.
Yeah, right? I'm mixing and matching, like, and Noah's Ark, right? Like, I don't know.
You know, it's nice that it's getting theological. They've built so much up about the way human beings are, and they're really, and I need to, as soon as I'm done recording this podcast, probably I'm going to put on The Leftovers. Because if this is more of the same stuff that, you know, Lindhoff's been delivering, I'm sorry, Lost burned me. I invested time and effort. And I went to Comic-Con in a homemade Dharma jumpsuit. And David Lindhoff was like, is that a Dharma jumpsuit? And I was like, yes, I made one out of a fireman's inner jumpsuit. So if the convention burns down, I will survive because it's fireproof. But but after the way that ended, I was just like, I'm not happy. The dog. And then Jack closes his eyes and that's it. And so
I saw someone say when it was that people came into, like, the show was fundamentally about, like, faith versus science, and the writers chose faith over science, and that's why everyone was pissed at the end. And when I saw that, I was like, I get that, because I was never mad about Lost ending. I was kind of confused, and I was like, huh, weird. But I was never, like, the way that people were mad about this ending, I know they were expecting answers, which is a very science thing. It's a very science-based thing, and the writers and, like, Damon chose to go with no answers. There is no answer, which, another theme on The Good Place, if anyone's watching that, because I think that there's this war between, which it doesn't have to be, there is a war, and I've seen a lot on television, I think this is a fundamental human thing, the war between reason and faith, the war between science and believing in something bigger than yourself, and these shows they're all kind of funneling that same message. So I think that Damon's always, he's been ahead of the curve. He's always been discussing this. And I think a lot of shows now are getting into it because it is something that is, I don't know, I think it's fascinating. But I think that's part of why people were so pissed, because I think they were expecting a science fiction or a science-y or science fiction answer based on all the random shit that he threw together. And yeah, they did a lot of random shit, but I also think that fundamentally it was a show that they wanted to go with faith.
No, that's actually a really great take. And it's interesting that you bring that up, because the only religious themed show, and admittedly I had kind of a problem with it. I mean, I'm a fan, I like it, I bought the material, I've invested time in it, but the only show that really tried to provide an answer for the balance between good and evil was Good Omens, and it said that they're both the same. And as much as I enjoy them, as much as I enjoy it, like, and as much as
I don't know if it's both the same. I think that's just like when people are saying that, like, you know, protesters and white supremacists are the same. You know,
yeah,
it's like they're not the same, but you like, don't want to be. It's like the Jedi. It's like if you, you know, watching the prequels, you kind of realize that the Jedi are not good. You know, it's not good and evil. It's two radical extremist groups. And I think most people just want to be people.
Exactly. And that was kind of the middle ground was that it's just two people, let them be themselves and be alone. Speaking of, you know, finding a middle ground, it's funny. One of the things that I think they built up is, you know, the humanity of all of these different characters. And the humanity of, can we talk about how Angela was, like, not skeptical of it, but she was willing to hold Manhattan to a standard.
Mm-hmm.
And that much I really appreciated, because you never, no, you see women holding people to a standard all the time, but it was just really, I can't recall seeing that in a TV show recently, and I'm probably just not watching enough television, but they never really get a chance to, like, develop that kind of thing. And if she is looking at God, like, she pointedly, and I would love to know if she, like, actually, I don't think she ever forgave him for what he did, you know?
I don't know if it's that she didn't forgive him, it's that he came into it at less than zero, right? He came into it as, in her mind, responsible for the death of her parents. And I think then it's, he had to climb up. But yeah, I mean, you can't be in a relationship with someone if you put them up on that high pedestal. Even Laurie didn't put him up on that pedestal.
This is why I'm not in a relationship right there. people give me the time of day and I'm like, hello, yes, here's money. Here's all of these things. I'm like a golden retriever, man. I'll just be like, okay, yes, you are great. You are the best thing ever. And everybody's like, people look at it and they're like, okay. And that's the problem with, you know, Light and the whole idea of people who don't seem to. But if Manhattan designed, here's a philosophical question. If Manhattan designed his little world on Europa, if Manhattan designed them to be, you know, to have no sense of self, and then was that abuse in and of itself, or was he just genuinely motivated? Was he motivated by the fact that he had to bring Vite there, or do you think that he recognized that life has to be messy? So he
had to. We don't know yet. Go ahead.
Speculate. Okay. Yeah.
Wait. So I'm sorry. Ask the question. Can you ask that question again?
Okay. The audience, with their omnipotent point of view, knows that Manhattan designed human beings on Europa with a lack of free will.
Did he say that?
Not a lack of free will, but he said they had no desire to serve themselves. They only had a desire to serve others. Okay, so that was it. That was what he said, like, almost exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Because he saw the idea of, you know, people serving their own identity. Or perhaps he really was just waiting for Vite to come along, and this was all just one big experiment. But he saw
to teach him a lesson,
and the idea of him creating a whole group of people just to teach one dude a lesson is profoundly disturbing to me.
I think this is a fundamental flaw in the way maybe even Vite was seeing himself towards the end. Is that from the original Watchmen, and I know he gets there towards the end of this episode, but I never felt that Vite wanted to be worshipped. I mean, he did something he knew he could never talk about. He wanted to be listened to.
Right?
And yeah. he wanted to be needed. He wanted to be the one who saved humanity. You know, whether or not that was even what he wanted, or whether he just knew he was the only one who could do it, was just something up for debate. But I don't know that he did something he couldn't tell anybody about. And it wasn't motivated on the need to be worshipped, because nobody could know that he ever did it.
Well, no, okay, I'm not asking about Vivite per se. I'm asking about the idea of the humans that Manhattan made on Europa, and presumably the angels too. And he created them without a sense of identity. Their whole goal, no, they're, listen, because their whole goal is service. And they were just made to serve others. That's been the thing that everybody says. Okay, so my two questions for you guys is, number one, do you think that's abusive or possibly like a bad thing or dangerous? And number two, do you think that the only way to develop a sense of identity is to have yourselves be broken in some way and it need it told that you need to defend yourselves for it?
I think we're born broken, so that's a whole other thing. I mean, to an extent, you know, even you come out of the womb, you have a personality, and you know, maybe it's because there's something in, you know, that, you know, comes with you, right? But it's like, I don't think it's that we're all, you know, nobody's, you know, born, you know, unmolded clay. You know, it's like you're born with something. My two kids are very different. And watching them grow up side by side, that becomes very obvious. You know, they came out at the same time, but I think the interesting thing here, before we get too deep, put this in the frame of what it is. Now that we know that these are the two people that rescued him, and he kind of wanted a place where he could feel safe, I assume. I think maybe the game warden, I feel like he might be his father, but I think the whole point of the game warden, if you're looking at the game warden as a person and not as a symbol, is that he's maybe, what, 12 years old, maybe 10 years old? And he loved his father, and his father left him. And now the only rule of this entire world is that you don't get to leave.
When was that rule? We never see when the rule is established, though. It's just... that's the rule.
You say
that
you
was what he was on trial for sure. Yeah. But so it may be that the warden made this rule. It may be that he made it, and that Manhattan never said, you know, you cannot leave. But he did say that was the rule, that you cannot leave.
I just feel like, I don't know, I'm getting a sense that he's punishing. This is all he's punishing himself. Like that he's using them to punish himself. Like, I don't know. Like, there's been no indication, like, we've gotten a little bit more, in, like, right? Like, we've gotten no indication that they're keeping him there.
No, this is, Manhattan's, like, out of the picture, but I don't know that Manhattan probably saw the future and designed some of this, so there is that, but Vite, this is kind of about, like, I'm kind of really curious about the dynamic of the game warden now.
The warden seems pretty, not free will, but like.
The warden's focus. Like, if you go back, okay, assume for a second that we're back in the, you know, in the Garden of Eden. Okay, assume for a second that we are back in the Garden of Eden as a species, okay, collectively, and you're milling around and you recognize that, you know, God's not there. Okay, maybe, or. No, wait, hold on. I've got a better metaphor. Okay. So you're at a theme park, okay? And it's the first thing that you've ever done. It's your first visit. You know, you're a little kid and somebody tells you no, you can't do the thing. Okay? We've all been around little kids, and it doesn't have to be a theme park, it could be anywhere, but somebody sets in place for you a rule, or at least denies you something. The reaction until you learn a sense of self-control is a sense of anger, but you never really, it takes a long time for people to develop that sense of anger and that sense of identity that says, I can't, you know, that says, I'm angry about this. Because it seems to me, and I don't have children, but having observed them for over a decade in customer service, what I have observed is that when you're really, really little, you get really angry, but it's not angry because you're angry about it. You're angry because you need food. Like, kids don't know the meaning of anger. They cry because they need food or they need to be taken care of. Okay.
It's early though that it comes in. Like, I remember the first time they were afraid, and they were afraid of being afraid. You could watch their faces. It's like something would scare them, and they would then be more scared because of the being scared. I think anger's a pretty early one, though. I mean, anger is like well before 1 year old.
Okay, but we if these humans are only around like 20 years old and they've been made on this planet and they've literally been made with only the desire to serve others and no desire to serve themselves, anger would logically be something that would be strange to them, because the game warden, as he's sitting there talking to Vite, and Vite, and he's just like, you know, and Vite's just like, I want to leave. The game warden wants to cry. He's like, how dare you leave? You know, we want to take care of you. How dare you leave? And there's a, I think he did set it up for them to punish him, because I think he's trying to do, maybe trying to grasp what Manhattan said. And we're grasping this because we're the audience. I mean, essentially, we're right up there with Manhattan. We perceive time for these characters differently. But I think that the game warden, for his part, is perceiving genuine anger, because he doesn't want this dude to go. Even if these characters look, even if these humans that are on Europa look like adults, and there's no guarantee.
Yeah, they're children.
Yeah. So I think that what we were seeing was the game warden being angry for the first time, which is a sign of developing a sense of self. Babies don't, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, babies don't have a sense. Do babies have a sense of self?
Like 3 months old? Probably not, no. But I mean, by the time you get to a year, like, they know what's their toy, you know, and you don't take it from me.
So, yeah, when they're, if these humans, if you perceive time like Manhattan does, then these humans are essentially 3 months old. I mean, they're babies. They're not babies in the traditional sense, but mentally and emotionally, Manhattan has kept them from being... Manhattan has like made them again, and I keep coming back to this because I really want you guys to think about it and answer me. Manhattan made them only to serve others and not to serve themselves. He wanted them to try and protect each other. Can you protect each other if you don't have a sense of self?
And well, this is the question of the Garden of Eden story. You know, if you take it from outside of, you know, a moral story, is that Adam and Eve were in the garden. They weren't told. I mean, they were told not to eat from the tree. They weren't told why or anything like that. And then they were tempted by the snake, right? They weren't necessarily totally protected, but they didn't know. So, I mean, I don't know. Is it, you know, it's like, so, I feel like it's...
Is Vite the snake?
Yes. I think, and there's an apple tree. It's tomatoes, but it's an apple tree. And I think it's interesting. Yeah. So here's the irony of it. The snake has offered them the fruit of the tree of knowledge, and they take the tomatoes and smush it in his face and reject it. It's kind of, if Eve said no and just laughed at the devil, even though that they were being killed or whatever. So
they didn't want to do it to him, though.
But he wanted them to do it to him. And that's the other thing,
too. They didn't want to do it. Well, sorry. I would say they don't want to do it because it's harming him, and they don't want to harm. They want to care.
Yep. And but he wanted it. He admits that. He's like, it's almost like they want them to torture you, and like, I can't. Believe it. And he's like, you don't know me. And I'm like, and I think that was him saying, yeah, I want to be tortured. I want to feel something because I'm stuck in this place and I can't. You know, I'm tired of feeling everything being peaceful. And not being, and that's it too, is it's not being needed. They have zero need of him, and he doesn't have anything to fix. And without anything to fix, he starts to go crazy.
So is utopia possible for human beings?
What's utopia?
No. I say no because I'm pessimistic, and I feel like there's too much selfishness.
I think it is with a lot less people and living in the world.
Yeah, like maybe if you only have like 100 or 1,000 people, like maybe it's possible that at that scale. But
the only reason that we've gotten to this point, you know, going, you know, evolutionarily, is that kind of need to self-preserve. But you know, that's the thing is that we have to balance, and we as a species have trouble with this, and other species go to different extremes. And we're somewhere in the middle of it. You have the need to preserve the self and the need to preserve the community. And on some level, the need to preserve the community is also about preserving oneself.
Isn't that the core essence of Watchmen? Because the show has dealt with themes of legacy and with themes of the characters preserving themselves. And I just find it very interesting that, like, here are these very complicated human beings that Manhattan ultimately returns to seek out, even though he comes back to, you know, even though he created these humans. I'm sorry, I'm really still stuck on the idea that, you know, these, and that's, I feel that's a very human reaction from me, that you would leave people in the middle of nowhere and make them only service others as opposed to yourself. I find that that actually hits me really hard, and I find it very I find it very abusive. And I'm saying
but it's
that
more, they don't even think thoughts. I mean, they are pre-programmed with all of their stuff.
I want to be careful about throwing around, I want to be careful about using the word abuse, because I just have a different definition of it. I don't think fundamentally what he did was abusive, because I don't think that he's even like thinking of it in those terms. I think if you're a god, you're thinking you give these people, you're giving the gift of life, and that's and you're giving them a life without, presumably a life without pain or whatever, because that's their paradise or utopia or whatever. And he's at the end of the day, he's experimenting and creating life and not really doing it. Maybe he's doing it well, maybe he's not doing well, who knows? But I don't know. I just want to be careful about calling that abuse, because I don't know. I guess if you're thinking of it as like a parent giving birth to a child and then leaving it in the middle of a desert, those are two different, very different things. Because one is a literal God and one is an actual reality of a thing that actually happened. So I don't know. I like to draw things like narratively between like real life and that, but I'm just not really getting that from this at all.
That's a fair point. I'll say harmful. It just really, I'm just as surprised as everybody else. I didn't realize how much the idea of leaving people by themselves to just, and immediate.
But that's the point. That's what the warden is there to talk to show to you, is that he left, and now he's upset because Bite wants to leave as well and leave him alone again. And I feel like he's different, though. I mean, the other people, yeah, maybe they don't want to believe, but they're not really sure why. They're very pre-programmed. It doesn't matter. They're not the same people, you understand? These are all different Crookshanks, and they're still making the same exact cake, and they're still doing the same exact things over and over and over again. And I think as far as most of the denizens of Europa, I'm not entirely sure. They definitely have bodies, but I'm not entirely sure that you can say they are human. I think the game warden might be different, or he might just be programmed differently. I mean, are these flesh robots? Because they are born with all of their thoughts. Things don't seem to occur to them outside of stuff that either they've been told by Vite or they've been pre-programmed.
That is also true. And, you know, I said that in an earlier episode, and as much as I shall close my line of thought on this and open it up to the rest of the people, because I think I just need to listen to some interpretations. I did not realize until we were talking about this how much it bothered me.
I guess, if anything, just to get my little context of it, I do think that whether or not they are people, the unethical thing was throwing the wild card into things of Vite, had he not been there, they would have lived fairly safely, and I mean, maybe you could say there may have been a longing or something, like I don't know, but there was no harm being done to them directly until Vite showed up. So
yes,
if nothing else, that is the most immoral act.
But did he want that? Does he think somehow? And I know that, like, as much as we're all feeling guilty about feeling it, is that we're thinking, does all of this stuff the devil is doing here, is it going to spur them to wake up? And yeah, I feel really guilty about saying that, but still.
Wake up? What do you mean?
Like, suddenly start to have thoughts that occur to them, suddenly start thinking on their own and not thinking like servants.
I think they already are, right? They're already in the process of thinking or trying to.
But they still made the cake, and they gave them. Was the horseshoe different? Was the horseshoe something different about the cake?
I think that, I don't know. I kind of read that scene as like they snuck it to him. I don't know why. Like, I don't know why they would do that.
Yeah, but I feel like it's a file, but they didn't quite get a file. So this is what these guys are like, all right, well, I'll start to dig out with this. Like, but at the same time, was it that there was something different about the, so the other thing is, was it that, you know, are they still trying to serve him by sneaking in the horseshoe? Yeah. But was it also really about the fact that they didn't just make the cake because they've been programmed to make the cake. They made the cake to sneak in the horseshoe.
Yeah. That's what I'm thinking. I
don't... Why would they have been making it in the first year? In the second year?
They were programmed to make him a cake on his anniversary, I think is what... I mean...
Why were they sneaking stuff into it, though?
Did they sneak something in the first cake?
Well, he tried to... When he offered him to cut... He offered him a horseshoe to cut the cake with. It wasn't... There was something hidden in. So it was like... That's why I saw the callback to it, and I was like, oh, maybe this is like... their way of like being like, oh, remember the horseshoe, you know, like
they got your back.
Yeah, I don't know, that's kind of how I read it. It was like a,
but remember, they're not the same guy, right?
Right. Yeah. I know that, but like I feel like yeah, I don't know,
why do they have an affinity for horseshoes?
Yeah, the horse, he's the pale, he rides the pale horse.
Yeah, maybe it's just to take care of the horses. I don't know, but
somebody, if you guys know, if you guys have an idea of what the horseshoe means, let us know.
Yeah, seriously. We're like galaxy braining over the horseshoe right now.
I guess what I thought interesting about the whole Europa world is Manhattan, he created it in the image of like the manor and the couple that he met when he was a child. But they specifically mentioned that they lost their son. So why did he not give Europa any children? Mm-hmm. And I mean, for me, if we're going to make biblical stuff, then it's like to avoid a Cain and Abel situation, I guess. But I don't know. I thought that was weird.
Well,
like,
they can't have kids because they haven't eaten from the tree of knowledge. Right? Mm-hmm. But yes, I did feel that.
I don't know, like, at least it seems like you're creating the most beautiful world and you're trying to do it in respect to these people who wanted a child that badly. I don't know.
Is Manhattan going to send his kids to Europa eventually? Because that's
I thought he sent them.
Yeah.
That's why I said it. Before you confirmed on another I thought he was just going to send them there.
Like, me too, but it's not really safe, is it?
Yeah. If I had a scenario, it'd be safe.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, but they would go crazy eventually too with the everybody not having an original thought. But smart.
I almost wonder if that wouldn't be the issue. I wonder if it'll be, you have three children with no supervision, and they're gonna start fighting over stuff. It's gonna be, what's that book with the kids on the island, and they like start killing each other. I forgot what it was.
Lord of the Flies. Yeah.
Yeah, it would be like that. Like, maybe the warden can control them. I don't know, but because they're little. Like, in 10 years, I don't know.
But I do think that's a good point, though. Like, we have like a Superman, we've gotten Superman allegories. Who's the next generation of babies that are going to be saved? Like, there's going to be more kids that say, we started the series with the two kids being saved. We're probably going to get a finale with those babies being by themselves and seeing looking upon a horizon of burning buildings or some shit. Like, I know it's predictable, but I see cinematic parallels everywhere.
Can we talk about, speaking of cinematic parallels, can we talk about how Superman, Cal walks into the Fortress of Solitude that belongs to, Right, yeah. So it was a weird juxtaposition that Veidt was like a failed Superman, and then here comes the real Superman.
Was he, or is he like kind of more of a? I mean, all right, first of all, we know that he's Thunderbolt, but is he also kind of like more of a Lex Luthor type? I mean, if you're looking like a genius trying thinking, I mean, because quite often, I mean, yes, Lex Luthor was, you know, criminal mastermind in the old days, but quite often he's portrayed as he thinks he's doing what's right. But I, so is he just like, this is the evil mastermind's lair, and he's got the system now that he's, you know, kind of doomed to always maintain for eternity while not being listened to, because obviously nobody's listening to the tape that he made that he should not have made.
Right.
Can we just talk about how he had his feet up on that thing? Like just like, you're a little too comfortable in your fortress. I don't know.
Well, nobody's around. Like, look, come on. If you had a giant fortress and nobody ever visited you,
I wouldn't have my feet up on it.
Although he didn't even need to look around, and he knew exactly what walked in.
Well, I guess.
Did anybody see anything cool in the stuff that he had laying around? It was definitely giving me, like,
yeah, they had them in Easter eggs in it, but I didn't notice the particular thing. Sorry.
No. I was curious if anybody eagle-eyed it, because I was looking at it and I'm like, I don't see anything, but I know there's got to be good stuff in there.
No, I didn't. I was looking too. I didn't notice anything.
Just so been like weird stuff, like a Legion flag ring just in there.
And then it disappears, right? That was a Doomsday Clock reference. Yeah. So there was definitely a lot of like historical stuff. And you can see it's been in disrepair. Like he's kind of lost his, you know, joie de vivre, because he had thought that he was going to make this, you know, world that apparently the naughty children don't listen, which I think was kind of right. I'm going to be completely honest. I was really kind of disappointed with that, because if he was smart enough to pull off the first hoax, shouldn't he have like a bunch of other plans that he could pull off? You know,
I mean, probably I feel like this kind of, though. Did you guys hear him say, he said, a little elephant told me, or an elephant told me. I don't think that he's down and out. Like, I do think that, like, something he's probably got, but he's pouting. Like, I'm not surprised. He's a pouter. He's a little pouty ass bitch. I'm not surprised at all that he's pouting, that everyone's being, but I would be pouting too if I risked that, all of that, and then everyone's just like, nah.
I just had a galaxy brain moment. We've forgotten about the Millennium Clock. What if the Millennium Clock, hear me out, is a commercial spaceport and they're gonna go get him?
Like, someone was like, gonna get Veidt?
As I say, wasn't he the one who was rocketing? Wait, no, that wasn't him. Never mind.
We still haven't reached the present, I don't think.
I think he's the one who lands, right? Crash lands? I thought that's what.
So what's the D? I mean, so let's be honest, there's just a lot of unsolved stuff here. There's a D that most websites are just, you know, skimming over. In the picture at the top of their article will be save me, and then D. For whoever D is, I don't think Dr. Manhattan. Are you gonna?
That would do. Like, why would he
spell that out? That would take forever. You write, you know, save me, John, right? but I think maybe it could be daughter. It could be, who knows? But there's a D there. So what is that? And he's not, when he's looking up at the satellite, he's not looking at Dr. Manhattan. He knows Dr. Manhattan is not even aware he's Dr. Manhattan. He's not going to come save him. As far as Veidt knows, Dr. Manhattan will never, you know, be Dr. Manhattan again, because he knows he put in the memory chip. So he's talking to Lady True.
Yeah, whose name we don't have, do we?
Yeah, we don't know what her real name is. So, I don't know.
So is he the one? Okay, does that mean, because she was like, my father will be with me, and she built him... He has to have been the one who crashed in the field then. So that has to have been taking. Yeah, that has to have been taking place in the past, because she was like, you're the most important place to me. So she sends something out to get him. and he comes back to Earth, and she's probably pulling the same thing that she did with her mother's clone on him, so we'll get a younger bite in the last episode.
Maybe.
But in any case, though, she wants Veidt and her mother, presumably Veidt and her mother, to see what the clock does.
Is it a clock, though?
Well, I mean, it's not
she
a clock,
says
but...
it's just a clock many times, right? So is it a clock that counts down to the moment when everyone in the world becomes Dr. Manhattan? Because that would give you peace, because everyone would kind of be like, oh, I see all possibilities in the future all at once.
Oh, man. But then you don't have humanity anymore. Why even bother at that point?
Well, what Veidt's going to come back and say?
You linked it to a comic book panel in chat in our group DMs. You linked to a comic book channel with a computer. And what was that computer's deal? Because that does seem like a potential way. And we were like, it's Computron or something like that. Okay. And he was like, I see, huh?
Our third or Legion reference. Is that
oh, Computo?
Computo. She's a Computo. That's Computo.
Computo the Conqueror. So I can tell the story of Computo again. It's like very quickly. Computo was I think I told this like last week, a couple weeks ago, but very quickly. Computo was Ultron, but before Ultron, and with a legion of superheroes, and Brainiac 5, instead of Hank Pym or Tony Stark for the movies, created this robot that was supposed to, it was a government project originally, and later it was something else. Later it had to do with Ra's al Ghul, so that's a whole nother story. But anyways, so he basically made an Ultron-like robot, and in one scenario, you know, it leads this army of, it's called Robotica, and they're coming to attack Earth, and they want the knowledge that Brainiac 5 has been holding back on them, and they're like, you can't give it the knowledge, it'll just make it more powerful, and Brainiac 5 finally comes to the realization that if you give it the knowledge, it will learn that violence is not the answer, and it will become enlightened, and it will go off and be peaceful. And that's what he does. He gives it all of the knowledge, and it kind of evolves to the next stage of its evolution and becomes, you know, goes off and becomes peaceful. And you know, it's you know, a religious experience for Brainiac 5. In that version, to see this kind of level of mind, like I think it's even beyond his mind, and that to me is like kind of the thing that I'm wondering is like if everybody reaches that kind of level of understanding that Dr. Manhattan has, and remember, Dr. Manhattan also, you know, was in Vietnam, so he hasn't always been this way, but if you see the universe that way, would there be less war? And I don't know if, I mean, I think maybe that's probably the conceit for the show, if that's how they're going to go. But, you know, obviously Dr. Manhattan is not without his flaws.
Because that's an interesting, I don't necessarily feel comfortable with the idea of, like, it would make sense if the 7th Cavalry suddenly was like, oh, suddenly, you know, everything, we understand now, and blah, 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 but maybe, I don't know, I'd feel better if he just winked them all out of existence. But apparently, you know, it would be interesting to see Keen like really brought low by that, but I don't know.
I can see what you mean, because like you don't want to. I mean, ideally, like anyone who has that kind of white supremacist beliefs would learn that they're wrong and change and stuff like that. But you don't want to sympathize with that. No, you don't want to put them in a victim role. Like you don't want to.
No, you don't want to put him in a victim role. There was a thread on Twitter that I read about that, actually, where the idea that you can't, the balance between making them human and between making them into cartoonish people, because if you make them into cartoonish people, people will misuse the definition and not take it seriously. And you have to be aware, and this was written by a Jewish person. I think her name was Coffee Spoonie. So if you're on Twitter, you should follow her, because she's a disability activist. But she wrote the idea, and there's several other people who are like, you know, recognize that these are human beings who have made really, really disgusting choices with their life and who have been taught this ideology. And, you know, the idea of them suddenly, I can think of nothing more punishing, but then realizing, holy shit, we were so wrong. But at the same time, I don't necessarily think it would come out with the, if everybody on Earth was suddenly given godlike power, I don't think it would come out with the idea that, like, suddenly it wouldn't be utopia, but suddenly we'd all be cool with each other. And it, that maybe might be the conceit of the show, to me, at least. Because if you give the, because everybody's going to want to use it for different things. And as we were talking about earlier, the reality that, you know, who they are is going to shape what they do with it. So I don't know if I like that idea. I mean, like, I was sitting there going, oh, it would be really interesting to watch Keen get his, but now I'm like,
It may not be. I mean, like, this is just one of my speculations. It may not be. It may be. I mean, I keep coming back to the fact that Dr. Manhattan wanted to be human. Adrian Veidt wants to be helpful, not wants to help, not be worshipped. I mean, it's like, it's not. The humanity and the messiness of humanity is better than the not messiness. Has been a pretty, pretty heavy-handed theme the last few episodes.
Yeah, and I could see how that sort of level of punishment, because it would be a punishment. I mean, we've seen that with Manhattan, and we've seen that with Blight. I just, if it has to be someone, I really don't want it to be Keen. I mean, maybe they could introduce it, maybe he could see it and be like, oh my god, I fucked up, and then explode, or like choose to be like, wow, I just don't deserve anything.
Like Raiders of the Lost Ark, is that what you're saying? They get a second where they can look at it and then their faces melt.
Yeah. I was gonna be like All-Star Superman, like, Luthor. he sees the world, and, oh, this is how you see the world, and then the story ends, basically. Sorry.
That's a great good book, go read it.
Would you if it's Grant Morrison, though, granted Grant Morrison had nothing to do with Watchmen, but that same era, that would make sense. It'd be like, oh, this is how you see it, but still,
I was really it was
much, well, he
much
made,
later, yeah.
But I mean, he's from the same era writer, but he wrote this like, it's not recent, but recently.
Right, it's recent in the grand scheme of my life. It's pretty recent, but it's probably like 10 years ago.
I don't know if there's something's gonna happen with Manhattan's powers. If somebody's gonna get him, I would really rather it be Angela or Topher, and I feel like they're setting up Topher for it because remember, he had the puzzle. The manor house puzzle, and he had all the blue stuff, and then he had Babastus, his little lovey toy, and so like he I think he's kind of being set up to have to make that, you know, to play a bigger part in it. And we haven't even talked about
we're acting like we forgot who his dad is. His dad bought him the puzzle. And his dad is remembering
an underlying, well, this looks cool because it's my thing that looks cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He can't remember why he likes it, but he has an affinity for the castle, which he probably bought for Topher. So, yeah, I mean, that's the thing. We have to go back and, like, these things that we're thinking about, you know, out of context, like, oh, he was Manhattan. So he was Manhattan. Can I tell you one thing that I found really was an interesting, take, and especially with gender roles, is that point where she's in the kitchen, and he kind of zaps out, and then she hears the children yelling, "Daddy, Daddy, Daddy," and you think they know they're looking at their dad, but it's not. They're not used to Angela being around. They're used to their dad being around, and they're calling for their daddy.
Yeah.
And it was just like, I was like, oh my gosh, this is their dad. Oh, they're going to, this is so terrible.
well, that might, I mean, that kind of depends on the kids too. Cause I feel like me and my sisters, we yell for my dad. We were little before my mom. Well, mainly cause she's going to be like annoyed about it. Like, what do you mean?
I can see Angela being like, annoyed about it.
So like, I mean, it could be what you're saying, like a general thing, but it could just be, that's just how they are. Like, they know the parent that's going to come faster or without as much trying to explain.
Yeah. Yeah. And that kind of idea that we keep in your head, it's so easy to try to separate out Cal and Manhattan, but they're not. They're the same person. It's not like Cal's dead and now there's Manhattan. It's, Yeah.
Yeah, like, I mean, at least now they're the same, but it's also, like, outside of, okay, maybe Cal probably, like, watches, even though he can't remember his dad, that kind of thing.
You mean...
Like, as far as saying that they're the same person.
Oh, yeah,
yeah. Different as just Cal, it's still going to be different, even though he still kind of likes the same stuff.
Yes, yeah. So, I mean, his memories are blocked, and so he's going to be, but he's not, it's not like, I'm talking about now. Yes, Cal had no memory before, so there was some slight differences, but now Dr. Manhattan doesn't lose all the memories of Cal. He still has 10 years, and he had those before he took the memory blocker. He knew all of these memories before.
Did he?
Did he know them back in 85?
No, he didn't. He knew they would have kids, but he didn't know all the years. Once the thing went in his head, he didn't have any of that memory until she woke him up.
No, because he could, when he saw himself in the future, that future him had the memories, so he had the memories.
So he made, yeah, I can't tell that today. He, like, it might just be a plot hole, or it might be, when he told her the memories are blocked, he was lying.
No. While in our linear time, he was living linear for 10 years.
No.
But once you remove it, his past self could access the future Blue. Could access the memories of future Blue, and those memories of future Blue included all of the time he was Cal.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is, in the past the Blue version, before he turns into Cal or anything, he's talking to Angela, he mentions that he can't see the 10-year period. Even though what you're saying logically should follow.
That doesn't make sense, because he knows that they're going to have 3 kids and that they're going to be adopted and that they're going to live in Tulsa.
Yeah. So and... Or it's a plot hole. That's what I think.
Wait, what is this? The CW? Oh, I didn't. I don't know. The whole timey wimey stuff is very difficult to follow.
I like it. Like I said in the group chat, my favorite Harry Potter book is Prisoner of Azkaban. So
yeah, I'm very same.
Mind with the time loops, and the book did it way better than the movie.
Well, obviously, yeah.
The details, as far as that makes sense, kind of thing, but. So, I don't know. I mean, it is weird, though. Like, I have to wonder if it's on purpose or they messed up with the dialogue or something like that. Because why have him mention that if the memories are blocked off, even though he should logically have them? I don't know,
man. I'm just...
Yeah,
the figuring out the time travel stuff, and like, even we haven't even talked about. Did we talk about this? The causality? I think we did a little bit of like her creating her own future, basically, or creating their own essentially the time loop. Yeah, I think we talked about this, but like, that's like still. I mean, it basically means like it was always meant to happen that way.
But she still thinks he might be in some level. I think she still regrets his death and still on some level thinks he might be innocent, because she doesn't know, or I don't think she knows, about all of the secret stuff going on in their basement.
She knows.
Yeah.
She has his memories, though.
No, like she
I know what he's talking about. I'm talking about like, but when the death scene or whatever, like he was basically like snarling at him, like, I'm trying to help you people or whatever. Like, that didn't, I don't think she was like, I don't think she came away thinking like he was a good person or like didn't deserve to die, but I don't think she wanted the responsibility of being like the person that essentially caused it.
Yeah. I don't think she knows about the wife in the basement, though.
No.
Do you?
No, I don't think that. I don't think she knows about that yet.
John could have said something before, you know, all this went down, but.
That would be helpful, but, you know, John just.
Like he never saw that he said it, so I guess he's like not gonna say it.
But how cool is it that she's in crisis mode, and she just had to bash Cal's head in to get Dr. Manhattan to come out, and now he's out in the back, and all this stuff is going on, and she still is the cop. Yeah. She's still doing the detective work, even with all this crazy stuff going down.
That line where she's like, no, no, get out of the damn pool. That
get up off the damn pool, yeah. She's like, so great.
That's what Manhattan needed. He needed somebody who's just like, you know, who like, Lori didn't put him on a pedestal, and Janie didn't put him on a pedestal, but Angela really didn't put him on a pedestal. She was like, if you're going to be my partner, I'm going to hold you to that. And she did, because he was willing to make things, like, he was willing to make changes for her, and he wanted her comfortable. And, I mean, like, the whole body choosing scene, there is a lot of layers to unpack there. I'm curious what everybody thought of that.
Before we get to that, I do want to, what you just said about how, like, she's kind of bossing him around, I feel like it's almost another Superman reference.
Lois.
Yeah. Lois is.
Pick up your socks, Cal.
Yeah.
But yeah, go back to the body scene.
Oh yeah, I thought that was. I'm actually really glad that it was Angela who picked the body, because I was like, how are they gonna make this not weird?
I did. I turned to my husband and I was like, we talked about this last week, and this is a really good solution. He doesn't pick it at all. She picks it, and then there's no weirdness about, you know, what he's picking or how he's picking it, where he's picking it.
Yeah.
He just says, whatever you want. Mm-hmm. But it is kind of weird that she has an affinity for a corpse, but that's you know, I guess necessity.
I'm not surprised. The girl was like 8 years old, like asking if she could listen to the men shooting, like hear the man who murdered her parents get shot. Like, that's homegirl true. Has got some issues, you know what I mean? Like, that she's gonna work through. So that didn't strike me as weird at all. I was just like, oh yeah, it makes sense.
No, in the circle of life not. That he, we, I know we mentioned this last week, but according to PDpedia, he died in the employ of a Vite at Pyramid Industries.
Mm-hmm.
Or that's what's brought him to Vietnam, anyways.
Oh yeah,
sorry, Pyramid Construction, but yeah.
A nice little twist of things, I suppose.
Hashtag it's all connected.
What a Vite send that dude to die because he knew John would be there.
That would just be crazy. Yes, I think what I'm saying is, I think my grand hopes of Vite having plotted everything are probably not going to come true.
Yeah, it's
there's just too much to wrap up, and really,
yeah.
There's so much about Lady True that we haven't gotten to the end of. I mean, I think we kind of have a good idea of what is going on with Hooded Justice. But I definitely think there's more to Lady True, and there may be more to Lori, maybe, or maybe she just is in the wrong place at the wrong time. I don't know.
I mean, she's kind of the last of the old guard, you know, kind of coming in mm-hmm. and passing the torch, so to speak, because you have Manhattan, you know, and Manhattan is clearly, like, he should be playing that bigger role that kind of shapes it, but she's also kind of there as, like, the final, you know, the final witness. I'd be really interested. I know that we know what happened to Dan, but I would be really interested in finding out what he thought about all this. Because he's in jail.
Glad I'm not out there.
This is not... I'm done. I don't think he knew that Cal was Manhattan, but definitely. What time... When did they meet? What year did Cal and Angela meet? Did we? I know that they gave years.
It was 20 years. It was
40 years of after her parents died. I think.
But it was 2009 because he went to Vite in 2009, and Vite was like, you can't just be a black guy. That's problematic.
Yeah, that was in 2009. Yeah. But
I'm glad somebody called it out. Like, somebody addressed it. Like, I don't want to, you know, but.
But the irony of it being that old white guy that's an asshole that killed a bunch of people is annoying.
Yeah.
Like, fuck yep. you. You don't get to point that shit out. Shut up.
Like, well, he's looking for anything where he can be better than Manhattan, right?
It's so annoying. He's always trying to one up Manhattan. Manhattan's just like, I just want to be loved and have a baby. I don't care about any of this shit. And Bite's like, I'm mad that they're not using my plans. Like, they have so fundamentally different ideas of success, and like, it's wild.
But they weren't that same because Manhattan went off and he did his thing and he got bored, right? And he came back and then Veidt hadn't quite gotten that far yet. Then he went off and did the same thing and got bored. So it's kind of, I guess, I'm wondering if Manhattan learned that lesson. Like, he did all that stuff with making life and everything, and then he needed the messy, he understood that he needed the messiness of Earth, and then he wanted to give that knowledge to Veidt. You know, along with him possibly, you know, helping his people get to self-awareness if that happens.
That would be, and see, but needing that messiness too, that, I keep coming back to like how they're going to end this. And I'm going, if you did take away that need for messiness, that would kind of be a major punishment, but I still really want the 7th Cavalry to fucking explode. Like, I really want that, but the idea of taking away, because essentially what happened to Manhattan was his humanity was stripped away from him. It's the same with, it's like the same, and Moore did a reverse thing with that with Swamp Thing, because, you know, Swamp Thing, the original Swamp Thing before it was Alec Holland in New 52, and granted, that was the only, one of the only good series to come out of New 52, but,
Well, no, let's not, I miss it now. we got in some of the 52 was not all bad.
Some of the rebirth has been much, much worse.
It's, okay. That is fair. I just, but the whole, the original arc for more Swamp Thing was that it was this all-powerful being learning how to be human. And Alan Moore loves writing dudes who get all-powerful and they're like, holy crap, I don't want this. This is not what would make any sense to me. It makes me like, I don't want this, because you lose your, the more power you have, and this is a reoccurring theme throughout all of humanity that I've observed, the more power you have in any capacity, the less human you are. And that applies on all different levels. And it's such a, like, if you have absolute power, like, you're basically, and so Manhattan wants to kind of regain that sense of humanity, so he wants to make himself less powerful, as does, you know, perhaps to an extent, like, Veidt. Like, he wants to also make himself less powerful. So perhaps the idea that Keen and everybody else will get exactly what they want is just desserts. But I still, and I'm going to say this the third and final time, I still really want them to explode. The end.
I do think that we're going to continue getting these biblical allegories, especially between Adrian and John. And I made a couple notes, a lot of notes about their relationship and how they continuous, there's this dance they continue to do between each other. They know that they're manipulating each other. You know, Adrian's using Manhattan's need for companionship and love and family against him, essentially to depower him, something he failed to do. He even pointed it out. It's like, this is literally always my plan. And John knows he's being manipulated, and he's then using him. And he's using now, they're using, he's using his need for something, his I need to be worshipped, or I need to be recognized, or whatever, and they're basically trading off and using people. And this reminds me a lot of the end game, the story of God and the devil's bargain for humanity. Like, the ultimate choice was free will, or the choice was, here, will more of them worship you or more of them follow me? And I have a feeling that that's somewhat kind of a lesson that they're trying to get to, because there are fundamentally the problems with both sides, both things being, both figures playing with human lives. It's clearly not working out for either of them. And you could safe to say it's not really working out for either the devil or God in the larger grand scale of things. But anyway, that was my whole point. of what I think is, I think that's kind of like the larger scale that they're playing. They're kind of dancing with each other. And it reminds me of like that cosmic dance that we've read about, you know, or whatever.
So like the black stone and white stone on Lost?
Basically. See, Damon's thing is black and white, or things black and white. I mean, we've been talking about this all season. Good and evil, black and white, you know.
The duality of man.
Yeah. And that's essentially what it is, though. But like, and we're trying to argue that humans are not black and white. Like, that's the whole, what everything is boiling down to, is everything's more gray than anything. There are some things that are fundamentally wrong and some things that may fundamentally rewrite. But at the end of the day, things are so swirly that it's impossible to tell sometimes.
But it's Watchmen. So the question is it good and evil? I mean, we can couch it in good and evil.
I just said it wasn't. I just said it was. It could be all three. It could be
but
everything.
Like, so yeah. So is Manhattan definitely God, and is Veidt definitely the devil, or are they both two sides of the same coin? Although I think, you know, when he was Cal, he was definitely good.
I don't think he was good so much as he was just a person. He represented the person, yeah. Abraham, the Moses, the whatever. He's just a human. That was his human side. When God walks the earth as a human, I mean, we have countless tales of gods doing that and so many stories around mythology. That's essentially the same thing he was doing, was wearing, you know, human skin to what if God was one of us? I mean, it's basically what it is. Like, that's a tale as old as time. And then they basically, you know, did it in a way that was fascinating and bizarre, but that's kind of essentially what they were trying to ask. What if God was one of us?
Just a stranger on a bus. and you've been talking all season, you and Tony both, about how technically, like, Cal has been too perfect. Mm-hmm. He's been like too perfect, and so you kind of had to know that there was something up. But it does point out that, like, you know, is he still the messy human being if he's like just pretending at it? Can he really change the essence of what he is? And that's something that could also potentially be explored, as far as, like, you know, does God have shades of gray? I mean, technically, if Veidt is playing the devil, then technically, like, Veidt is half of Manhattan, and then that means that, you know, and I 100% agree with that interpretation, because the two of them are so snipey at each other, but they also treat each other like...
Sorry, I was gonna say, like, biblical God is kind of, not necessarily shades of gray, but, like, does say I'm a jealous God and stuff like that, so...
At least, depends, you know, on the interpretation, just, yeah, as I say.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. But yeah.
So, I mean, there's an argument for not wholly pure God in a way. I don't want like religious people coming after me, but but like, it is kind of like, it's not as complicated as God is like wholly all good and wholly without any kind of like negatives, I guess. It's just ultimately, God is correct, so you understand the context of certain things.
Right. And if that's the case, then we can argue that to be correct, you do have to have that messiness, because God themselves acknowledges biblically and otherwise, and puts it to questions, like, do we need the mess? And Watchmen seems to say, as a work of fiction, that yes, you do need the mess. You do need the opportunity to choose which side you're on. And that in losing, and you guys can correct it, but then in losing the opportunity to make that choice, and that's something else that, God, we could go and you could, like, I have all these philosophy questions now. It's like, well, okay, by default, well, no, go ahead.
I tell my kids that, you know, it's, for example, courage. Courage is not being afraid. It's being afraid and doing it anyway, right? And if you are made in a way, such a way that you cannot not be good, then what is the virtue of being good, for example? So there is that kind of, if you don't have free will, you know, then it's just, it's like, are you even, you're kind of neutral, right? Because that's, but and I think that's it, is that it's that humanity is brilliant because it has free, we have free will. And I'm not probably saying this too well, it's midnight, but.
No. I get what you're saying, but like, yeah, I would argue that Manhattan is not concerned with the qualifying whether they're good or not. It's, this is a positive, or rather, it's the act is the same. Regardless.
But yeah, I think, I don't, yeah, I don't know if it's not about good, it's about, but it is about the free will. I mean, he left them behind to come and be with real people, to come and live a real human life, even though he had all of these, you know, children up on Europa that he just kind of abandoned because it wasn't dimensioned, it wasn't interesting, it didn't surprise him, it was, you know, it was again, you know, what he subjected Adrian to, the same thing over and over and over again. So I mean, one of the things that he had, you know, when he went to Mars and he was having, I mean, back in the comic, and he was having the big issue of, you know, trying to figure out, you know, what do I do? Do I help humanity? Do I not help humanity? Do I just leave everybody behind? Is, what's the point? You know, all the stars are dead. I mean, like, super emo, like, to the extreme. And then we have the quote that I think is kind of part of the basis and maybe the kind of seed that a lot of this grew out of, is, and I think I read this last week, but we gaze continually at the world and it grows dull in our perceptions, yet seen from another's vantage point, as if new, it may still take the breath away. So, I mean, that obviously is, you know, here he's being Cal, but I mean, that's it, is that he wants the messiness of humanity.
And I think that's a great point to go to. What do we want to see? Everybody go around the room and say one thing that you want to see in the finale.
Let's say my crack theory, my crack want is Petey absorbing the Manhattan molecule, getting the power. he was in suspicion. Him and either him or Wade. I think one of them, I mean, if we're going for a really, like, out there kind of resolution, and it would be funny.
Okay. Somebody else jump in.
I really am hoping for a resolution that satisfies me, but I don't know if that's going to happen. I don't want my fave to die, but I know that at least one of them probably will. Someone's going to die. What I do want is to see the kids kind of mean, like, I want them to be more meaningful in this overall end of this. Like, I want to know why Lady True is the way she is, but, like, I want to know what Beyond and, like, the rest of the kids, like, we've had a lot of focus on this next generation. Like, I really hope that comes to fruition in the finale. Like, what do those building blocks mean? You know what I mean? Like, so that's what I kind of want to see.
Awesome.
Watchmen Next Generation.
Hey.
Wendy?
So part of me just wants to be surprised, and I'm sure I will be, but again, like, it's Lindelof, so I'm a little worried that it's going to be kind of either way too religious or, you know, kind of, you know, not satisfying, or like everybody dies, you know, like, you're like, oh. So I wanted to be surprised, but not in a way that's going to be completely unsatisfying. I still kind of want to know what's in the Christmas present, but I think that now I can appreciate that there's joy in not knowing what's in the Christmas present.
Which is a solid representation. You had a Manhattan moment right there. I mean, you appreciate the joy in not knowing. As for me, and all three of my cohorts are going to hate this. Yes, yes, yes. I want the show to end with a title card that says Watchmen HBO will return in 2023. I don't hate it.
I can't get on that until I see where we're left off. I don't know.
Series, I want that title card at the end because I don't want to stop recording the podcast. That's why. Aww. But anyway, because we tried this with Swamp Thing and I'm turning into a one hit wonder with TV shows.
We'll just keep picking up the really good ones that only last a season. We'll make one whole compilation at the end.
The archives of one season DC show.
If you would like to contact Watchmen Podcast, you can email us at watchmentvpodcast@gmail.com. You can post a comment on our website at watchmenpodcast.com. If you'd like to leave us a voicemail, you can call us at 918-200-9103. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Instagram at Watchmen Podcast. On Twitter, you can follow us at Watchmen Talk. We're available on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, and Stitcher Radio. We always love it when you give us ratings and write reviews. Watchmen Podcast is a part of the DC TV Podcast Network, so if you are interested in other DC shows, you can check out Batwoman Podcast, Black Lightning Podcast, DC TV Classics, DC's Legends of Tomorrow Podcast, iZombie Radio, Krypton Podcast, Stargirl Podcast, Supergirl Radio, Swamp Thing Radio, Flash Podcast, more coming soon. And you can subscribe to DC TV Podcast on Apple Podcasts and follow DC TV Podcast on Twitter and like DC TV Podcast on Facebook. Until next episode, tick tock, tick tock.